We in the Diamond Dealers Club try to take care of all your needs. Last week we had the Israeli delegation here to try to take care of your financial needs. We are lucky to have one of our most esteemed members, Meilech Fastag, that does take care of all our needs, Heim Baruch Heim Begashmi, both spiritually and financially. One of our largest important firms, he's our financial guide and our spiritual guide in sponsoring such a beautiful, beautiful class that we're about to hear. Not to keep on raving about him, but I think Mr. Fastag and his family personify, really, really, we say in Hebrew, Torah Gedula. He's really a person who's at the apex of the spiritual world, and he stands at the acme of the financial world. Meilech, it's an honor and privilege to have you as a member of our club. We have with us Rabbi Marber, a noted Talmud Chacham, a noted Talmudic sage, who is an expert, Dayan, a judge, who is an expert, proficient in all areas of Jewish law, but it's law that applies that it's good for everyone to understand. The Jewish law is universal. We can all learn from it. We can all gain from it. Without further ado, Rabbi Marber, thank you very much for addressing us this evening. Thank you.
First, to begin with, just a special thank you to the Diamond Dealers Club and President Ruvain for hosting the event, for Meilech Fastag, who is really the force behind organizing and making tonight's event happen. Our topic tonight is competition. It is a very difficult and sensitive topic. You don't need me to come in from Lakewood to tell you that the competition is brutal. As time goes on, it's gotten harder and harder for a person to make a parnasa. And people, we're all Americans, we all tend to be free market capitalists, we're all into competition. Until that is, a Walmart moves into our neighborhood, or until someone starts putting stones online and that threatens our parnasa, and suddenly, take a step back, we have to think about it a little bit more carefully, what is appropriate, what isn't appropriate. In addition, virtually everyone here today has probably been the victim of a competitor who cut corners. A competitor who managed to get a deal, get a client in a way that seemed to be inappropriate. And very often people's reaction is that, listen, if I'm losing out, that's why I need to compete, I can play the same game, I can do the same thing. Now that being said, if you one day you come into your office and you see there was a burglary. Someone smashed the windows, opened the vault, and made off with some diamonds. Would you say, okay, that's what it takes to survive, tomorrow I'll break into an office? No, we understand. This is not how you do business. There is something deeply wrong, and you never wouldn't imagine trying to replicate that kind of behavior. And yet, for some reason, when it comes to competition, we have a little bit of a different attitude. And there we seem to think that, hey, if this is what people do, then it's okay for me to do it. And therefore, tonight I'd like to spend a few minutes going through, beginning with the sugya, beginning with the Gemara, and talking about how Jewish ethics apply today in the diamond trade. Now, to understand the question, let's go back to my example. We all understand if someone breaks into your office and steals a diamond. So, he's a goslin, he's a thief. He took something that belonged to you. What happens when you have a client, someone comes in and comes into your office one day, you walk out, he goes over to your computer, looks at your client list, gets their contact information, and suddenly, wonderful, he has all your contacts, he reaches out to them, and he steals a good percentage of your business. Has he taken anything that belonged to you? Is he a thief? What did he take? What do you own? Do you own your clients? Halavai. So when we talk about competition, when we're talking about taking away people's deals, we have to understand what is really wrong. And once we understand that, we'll have a better idea of what's permitted, what's prohibited, and what's okay and what should be avoided. Now, there are going to be two separate concepts. First, we're going to deal with a concept known as ani mahakpi b'charara. We'll explain what that is. And that is interfering with a specific deal. Then we're going to discuss the concept of marufia, which is probably the more meaningful topic to the most of the people here, and that is dealing with relationships. interfering, someone has a client, someone has a supplier, you come in and push the other person aside. When is that permitted, and when is that a problem? So let's begin with the first sugya of Ayin Mahapach. All of these halachos are derived by a very simple story in the Gemara, in the Talmud. The Gemara talks about how there was a piece of real estate for sale, and one of the Amoraim, Rav Gidl, was pursuing the property, he was negotiating, he was about to purchase it. Meanwhile, unbeknownst to him, Rav Abba, one of his colleagues in the Beis Medrash, swoops in the last moment and gets the deal for himself. He buys the property. Rav Gidl was very upset. What kind of behavior is this? Especially for a Talmud Chacham. I was negotiating, I had a deal with the seller. How can you come and swoop in and take the deal away from me? So, the Gemara says, explains the story, he went to his Rebbe said, okay, wait, I'll take care of it. Waits until Yontif. Rav Abba went to greet his Rebbe, as is customary on Yontif. So his Rebbe pulled him over and said, Rav Abba, I have a question for you. Ani Mahapit B'Charar, which we'll start with Rashi's explanation, there's a poor person, and he's walking down the street, and he sees there's a Danish on the floor. He's about to pick it up. Someone sees the fellow reaching down, he goes, slides in underneath, grabs the Danish, takes it for himself. What's the deal? So Rav Abba says, he's a Rasha. You can't act like that. The first person that Ani was about to pick it up, you leave it for him. His Rebbe said, aha, if that's the halacha, how could you go ahead, and that property that Rav Gidl was about to purchase, how can you go ahead the last minute and take it for yourself? Rav Abba said, I didn't know. No one told me that Rav Gidl was here first. Now that you tell me, I'm not interested in the property, I'll give it to Rav Gidl, I'll give it to him as a present. And that's what he did. He wanted to give it as a present. Rav Gidl didn't want to accept it. And the end of the story was they made a yeshiva on the property. This is the Gemara. This is the entire... Now let's think a moment about this story. The Gemara says, if a poor person is about to pick up a Danish on the floor, someone comes, slides in and grabs it, he's a Russian. Why? When you see something on the floor and you're about to pick it up, is that yours? No, it's on the floor, it's hefker, it's ownerless. When you pick it up, if it has no owner, when you pick it up, you put it in your pocket, at that point it's yours. You took possession of it. But simply because you're about to pick it up, that doesn't mean that it's yours. Nevertheless, the Gemara is telling us a new halacha, that if someone is about to take it, he's there, he's bending over, there's nothing in his way, going ahead, grabbing it away, interfering with his purchase or with his picking it up, that itself qualifies as a rasha, that's something that you're not allowed to do. Now based on this, halacha is that the same thing applies to a sale. The Rav Gidl's case, if you're about to purchase something, you're walking in the club, you see two people talking, they're negotiating over a stone, and they come to terms, they say, okay, this is the agreement. There's no kinyan. You didn't say mazel bracha, but they agreed to sell the stone. Or perhaps a more common case would be, is you're looking for a particular stone, you see that someone has it in an inventory, you call them up and you say, listen, I need this particular stone, I want to take it. Put it aside for me, I'm taking it. The seller says, okay, fine, no problem, I'll put it aside for you, come tomorrow, you'll pick it up, and you'll pay me. The next day you show up in his office to pick up your stone, and he tells you, I'm sorry. After I hung up with you, someone else came along, offered another couple of dollars, I sold it to him. Now, in these cases, do you have a claim against the second person who bought the stone? Can you force him to sell it back to you? No, it was never your stone. The seller told you he would sell it to you, but there was no sale. You didn't say mazel bracha, you didn't pay for it, you didn't pick it up, you didn't take possession of it. But because there was an agreement to sell it, you were about to close, then someone else who comes and interferes with that deal is considered a rasha. So once there is a meeting of the minds, once two parties have an agreement to interfere with that deal, would be us. So who I did, going back, if you're on the club, two people are talking, they say, okay, deal, this is the price, this is the price, I'll deliver it tomorrow. So go over to the person and say, listen, I just overheard the conversation. I'll tell you what, I'll sell you the stone for a couple of dollars less. Or if you go or the other way, you tell them, I need that stone as well. I'm willing to pay you a few dollars more. That violates Ani Mahapit B'Charara, and it's called a rush. Now, unfortunately, if you're the victim of this behavior, if someone does it to you, there's no recourse in Beis Din. We can't force the person to give it back because it was, you know, it's while this is not appropriate behavior, just because you had an agreement to buy something, until you pay for it, until you take possession or mazel bracha, it's not yours. But nevertheless, it is us there. You're not allowed to go ahead and interfere with another person's deal. Now, this raises a number of questions and a number of problems. You have a stone. You're asking $10,000 for it. Some nunna comes along and tells you he'll give you $7,000. You tell him, no way. You go down $9,800. But someone comes along, hears a conversation, you know what? I'll pay you $98,000. Can the first person, the first bidder, object and say, listen, I was here first, stay away? Does he have the right to claim money back to Harara? No. The answer is no. And the reason is very simple. Ani Mahakuk applies only when there's a meeting of the minds. There's an agreement. He's asking 10, there's an agreement to pay 10. At that point, all you're missing is the mazel of bracha, the payment, the delivery, the technicalities. At that point, everyone else has got to stand back. On the other hand, when they're negotiating, when they're handling, the seller's not happy yet. The seller's asking for 10, the other guy's at 7. You can't prevent someone from jumping in and making another bid. If we would do that, that's hurting the seller. So it's only when there is an agreement in principle, there is to the terms, the price, the payment terms, etc. At that point, no one else is allowed to interfere. But if they're still negotiating, there this halacha does not apply. There is actually an interesting exception. This is an Aruch HaShulchan. He says that if you're in a shuk, you're in the marketplace, there the halacha is a little bit different. If you've ever been to a shuk, and the truth is, this probably qualifies as a shuk, where there's a lot of handling, buying, and selling. There, we're a little bit more strict. There, when two people are talking, you have to wait until the conversation's over to jump in. So even if they're far apart, he's asking 10, the offer 7, it may or may not happen. You have to at least wait until they finish the conversation. Once he walks away, once he moves on, then all bets are off. But to jump into the conversation, the Aruch HaShulchan says, a marketplace, is, we have to be a little bit more careful, and that we have to stay away from as well. So again, just briefly recap, once there's a meeting of the minds, going ahead and interfering with this deal is going to be awesome. Interestingly enough, the Chavetz Chaim, when he talks about Lashon Hara, when he talks about slandering other people, one of his examples is our situation. A person agrees to buy something, he comes the next day to pick it up, the seller already found a better offer, so he sold it to another party. The seller is embarrassed, so the seller tells the buyer, you know what, I really wanted to give it to you. Someone else came into the store, I told him I can't, I already promised it to Yanko, but he insisted, he just put money down and he ran up with your stone. Go after him. This is the Chavetz Chaim's example of Lashon Hara. Says you can't do that. So although the second person perhaps should not have interfered, but if it does happen, you can't do anything about it and you can't go ahead and badmouth the person that does it. Now, very often, in these situations, it's when there's a meeting of the minds. What happens if there's a meeting, you make an offer on the stone, the seller says, okay, I'll put it aside for you, come tomorrow. The seller then starts saying, wait a second, maybe I was a little bit too quick. Maybe I can do a little better. And the seller goes back to the floor or makes a few phone calls for some brokers and says, can you do better on this deal? And someone says, yes. And puts in a higher offer. Is that person violating Ani Mahakuk Harara? Is he killing the first person's deal? So the answer is no. Because Ani Mahakuk is, the seller and buyer have an arrangement. Another buyer jumps in and says, I'll offer you more. However, in a case where the seller now has second thoughts, he decides not to go through with the deal, and he offers it to someone, that person who he's offering to is not interfering, not killing the deal. The deal's already dead. The seller already had his second thoughts. So the seller may or may not be acting appropriately. If he gave his word, perhaps he should honor it. But putting that aside, Ani Mahakuk is when you go ahead, you interfere with the deal. If the seller contacts you, it's not a problem. Now, this is extremely common. If you have a deal on a stone, but the seller has this posted online, and he keeps it online, it's very hard to argue that someone who puts in an offer would be violated on Ani Mahakuk. Because by keeping this stone listed online, by basically your the seller is advertising to the world, I'm interested in selling. Make me an offer. This is my price. See what you can see, and hoping someone will put it in. So almost by definition, if he keeps it online after he tells you he's putting it aside, he's basically telling you, you know, this deal is somewhat shaky, and you can't accuse someone who comes in and puts in an offer of violating ani mahapa. Now, I'll tell you, this is Rashi's pshat in ani mahapa karar. Okay, so there are really two separate issues, and I don't want to get too. And that is, if the seller tells a buyer, "I'm selling it to you for this price," we have a deal. The seller gave his word; he shouldn't be backing out of his word. That's an argument or an issue you have with the seller. This concept that we're dealing with about, we'll call it tortious interference, which is the legal terminology. I'm not sure if that's more or less understandable to most people than ani mahapach, but we'll try it out. Mishapara is only when you pay, and again, mishapara is your claim against the seller. You gave my word. Right. So again, when a seller gives his word, if he accepts money, then there's a mishapara. If he didn't accept money, he just gave your word, then it's a concept of mechusar amana. Generally, he should be honoring his word. But that's between you and the seller. We're discussing someone interfering with your deal. And this tortious interference on imapach is only when that person took the initiative, not when the seller reached out to him. Now this is the way Rashi understood the halacha. Taisus comes along and argues. And Taisus has the following problem. What in the world is wrong with interfering with someone else's deal? It doesn't belong to him. You didn't sign a contract, you didn't pay for it, you didn't take possession. What's wrong with going ahead and trying to get the deal for yourself? Taisus says that we're dealing with a concept of yashar v'toyev. It's not correct. It's not the way a person should behave. Taisus says, so wait a second. Why isn't it correct? The reason why it's not correct is there are a lot of diamonds that are out there for sale. There are a lot of vendors, a lot of people, there's a lot of supply. Why, of the thousands of diamonds that are available, you want to come just to this diamond, this seller, this buyer, interfere with their deal? Find another diamond. Find another deal. So going ahead and since once there's a meeting of the minds between two people, the halacha is, why interfere? Go somewhere else, find another diamond. To go ahead and instead of going elsewhere to focus on this one, that is not ethical, and that we can stop, that will be this tortious interference. However, Taisus says, let's go back to Rashi's case. If there's a Danish on the floor, and your person's about to pick it up, you come and grab it. So Rashi said, that's a problem. You're interfering, he's about to pick it up. Taisus says, wait a second. Can you find the Danish somewhere else on the floor? No. You know, Danishes don't grow on trees. You know, it's not available elsewhere. You can't go somewhere else. Taisus says, when you can't go somewhere else, all bets are off. Until they make a kinyan, until they consummate the transaction, whoever gets it, gets it. And even though there's a meeting of the minds, anyone can come in, put a better offer, try to get the deal for himself. Now, you might not realize how important this is, because it's probably not that often you find diamonds lying on the streets. So the concept of free doesn't exist. But what would be if there's a diamond being offered for sale, half price? A phenomenal deal you can't find somewhere else. What did you say?
It does not happen.
Doesn't happen. Okay, but what if there's an incredibly good deal? There's a buyer comes in, or in that case, or there's a supply of diamonds. It's unique, it's a rare stone, you can't find it somewhere else. Someone comes along, has a meeting of the minds. Are you allowed to come and interfere and try to get the deal for yourself? So if there's a contract, if they paid for it, there's nothing to talk about. Once there's a contract, once there's a kinyan, it's over. But beforehand, excuse me? If it was billed, well, yeah, once he takes possession, he says, I'm buying it, and he takes possession, that's enough in halacha to be considered to consummate a transaction. In the industry, mazel bracha is probably also enough to consummate the transaction as well. So payment is just one way, but there are many other ways for that to happen. But assuming it's not final, it's just a verbal agreement, and they didn't say mazel bracha, no, they didn't take possession, it wasn't paid for. So in that case, normally, for someone to come along and to try to put in a bid, that's That's interfering. You can't do that. However, if it's this unique deal, if it's a phenomenal price that you can't find elsewhere, Tosfos says all bets are off, and you're free to go ahead and try to get the deal for yourself. Now this is... However you're going to get it. You'll bid higher, you bid a couple more dollars, better terms, however you'll get the deal. But the point is, there are no restrictions. You can go ahead and try to get the deal for yourself. Now this, again, this has tremendous ramifications. Many times when parties are fighting over a deal, the reason why they're fighting over it is, it's a very, very good deal. So if it's unique enough and special enough that it rises to the level of a mitzvah, of something which is, can't be found elsewhere, then these restrictions do not apply. What's the bottom line halacha? Do we follow Rashi or do we follow Tosfos? So here it depends whether you're an Ashkenazi or a Sephardi. The Ashkenazi and the Ramah follow the ruling of Tosfos, and the Ramah paskins that if it is a special deal, if it's a phenomenal price, these restrictions do not apply. On the other hand, Svardim... Okay, fine. So we'll get to relationships in a few moments. That's the second half of the lecture. So if you're Ashkenazi, you follow the Mechaber and says if it's a phenomenal price, it's okay, all bets are off. Svardim follow the ruling of the Mechaber, and they are more machmir, and even if it's a phenomenal deal, still these restrictions will apply. Once there's a meeting of the minds, they would not be allowed to interfere. Now, what happens if one party in part of the transaction is an Ashkenazi, the other person is a Sephardi? You'll have a... It's really going to be a question. It's really the question of the person who's interfering, what flavor he is, because he's the one that has this halacha. Now, what very often happens, usually at least in Lakewood, when there's a fight about these matters, it involves real estate, where someone's about to purchase a property, there's a verbal agreement, they didn't yet sign a contract, someone else comes ahead and wants to bid up the offer. So there we have the same issue, he's interfering with the first person, and we have the question, is this permitted or not? So the bottom line halacha is that it really depends whether this property being offered for sale was such a phenomenal deal. If it was in a foreclosure, it was a tax sale, and it's a price which is incredibly good bargain, then the second person can claim, there are no restrictions, I can go in and put in the bid. What very often happens is the parties are fighting whether or not it's such a good deal. And in fact, I had a dentaire once. Two gentlemen came to my house. They were fighting over a piece of property. And what happened is that the person, the agent that was representing the first buyer, the one that had the bid, claimed that, listen, I was here first, and this person came to interfere. Bezin should intervene and say, tell him not to put in the bid. The second person countered and said, no, this is such a phenomenal deal. Therefore, all bets are off. I'm allowed to put in a higher offer. First agent said no. He realized he was going to lose the dentaire. He said no. It's really not such a good deal. It's not such a good property. The price isn't so good. And then the broker realized that his client was sitting next to him. So he was stuck. If he says it's not a good deal, his client's going to look at him. Then why are you selling this to me? If you tell him that it's a phenomenal deal, he's going to lose his argument of Ani Bach B'Chararo, which is actually what he did at the end. But anyway, be that as it may, if it's a phenomenal deal, Taisu says it is okay. Still, the Shulchan Aruch Harav says it's a Midas Chasidus. It is a person should. It's appropriate to walk away anyway. But strictly in halacha, a person does have the right to interfere if it is a phenomenal deal. Now, one other point, which is a bit of a dispute, is until now we spoke about two very opposite extremes. One case is the guy's offering $10,000, the buyer's willing to pay that amount, there's an agreement in principle, everyone agrees it would be interfering if you try to get the deal. The other extreme was he's asking for $10,000, the buyer's offering $7,000. There, everyone agrees, you're allowed to jump in, there's no meeting of the minds. What happens, the seller starts at 10, The buyer starts at 8. They haggle back and forth, and now they're holding $200 apart. Now, when they're $200 apart, is this deal going to happen or not? So the So the Prisha says when you hit that point where it's clear the deal is happening, no one's killing the $10,000 deal over $200. When you hit that point, even though there's no meaning of the mind, that's enough for Anemap. Now, what that point is, whether it's $200 or $400 or $100, that's subjective, and it will depend on the industry and depend on the time. But now, when you get to that point where it's obvious that without outside the deal is going to happen, at that point, everyone else should back off, everyone else should stay away, and let the first person, the person who was there first, to go ahead and to take it for himself. So this is the first half, and this is the idea of Arim HaPach. Well, and this discussion is all about interfering with a specific deal. Now, Taisus extends it that it applies to employment as well. Someone's looking to hire. He interviews a few people, likes one of them, tells them, okay, you're hired, come to me on Monday, you'll start. The next day, someone else hears about it, calls up the employer and says, I'm willing to work for a lower price, I need the experience. The same issue applies. Since there was already a meeting of the minds, you already offered the employment to the first person, even if there was no contract, they didn't start yet, still interfering with that deal is not appropriate, and the second person should stay away. Let's now discuss relationships. You have a client, you sell to Tiffany's account. Now they're buying from you, it's a very lucrative account. Someone comes along and they want to bump you off as a supplier. They want to take over the accounts. Or for that matter, you have your source, you're importing stones from overseas, you have your supplier. Someone comes along and wants to replace you, goes to the seller and says, listen, I'll start buying your entire inventory, sell it to me exclusively, and wants to push you aside. How do we deal with these cases? Now, these cases are a little bit different. And in a way, it's better than what we've discussed until now, and in a way, it's worse. In a way, it's not as bad, because you're not interfering with a specific deal. Until now, there's an agreement on a property, I'm about to buy it, we have an agreement to buy it, you're coming to take it, so the halacha is, once there's a meeting of the minds, everyone else stays away. Here, it's just, you know, until now he's done business with one person, but that was until now. What happens tomorrow, who knows? On the other hand, as you all realize, it's much worse because you can really hurt someone's entire livelihood. He has a supplier, he has a good client who has a big account. You might be taking away a very big chunk of his business. So how does halacha look at these kind of questions? So to understand this, we have to go through a very brief gemara. This one is in Bava Basra on Daf Chaf Aleph. I'll go through the gemara very briefly and then discuss the different ways to interpret the Gemara, and then we'll talk about how that applies today. The Gemara in Bava Basra is talking about the idea of competing with someone. Someone has a pizza shop, you want to open up another pizza shop right across the street. You're going to hurt the first person's panasa. So the Gemara has a dispute whether the first person can say, stay away, this is my neck of the woods, I was here first, go find yourself, open up a pizza shop in another location. The Gemara brings down a halacha that if you have a fisherman that set up a trap and he's for the fish in a specific location, so he has the right to tell everyone, stay away. You can set up your trap right next to mine, move a little bit downstream, set it up somewhere else. So the Gemara says, okay, we see from here that you're allowed to, that you're not allowed to compete with someone. The person has the right to demand his space. Don't open up next to me. Gemara says, no, perhaps not. Gemara says the words, Shani Dogim V'Yoav Sierra. Fish are different because Yoav Sierra, and there are a few different explanations to this, but for some reason, you're not allowed to set up a trap next to someone else's existing trap. Now, there are a number of reasons why. One explanation is that the way fish work apparently is that once they see one trap, the smarter fish start getting nervous. They, I don't know, somehow get the message to the other ones, they all skip town. They moved to another part of the river, another part of the lake. So by you putting your trap next to an existing one, that will warn off all the fish, and they'll all run away, and no one will catch any fish. That's one explanation. Another explanation is that the fish go into a trap. The fish, the way they work is they're in one trap. They see another trap with bait next to it, they'll leave one trap and go into the next trap. So since the fish were already in your trap and they're going to move to the next one, that's why that case is worse. The other explanation is that by a fish, it's talking about you're going after, I guess, a whale or a big fish. The person tracked down, he already figured out where its lair was, and he's going to bounce to trap, and at that point, interfering is a problem. So this is the Gemara. Taisus has a problem with this Gemara. What was Taisus' opinion? If someone's about to pick something up, it's hefker, it's lying on the ground, are you allowed to interfere with it if it was free? Taisus says yes, no problem. If that's true, why is this case worse? The fish, you're not paying for the fish. They're floating around in the water. So if you're allowed to take things that are for free, then why is this case worse? Taisus answers, again, Taisus gives a few answers, but one of his answers is that umnose bekach. Here's your panos. You find a Danish on the street, whether you pick it up or not, that's not what you're making your living off. I certainly hope not. The fellow who's fishing, that's what he does for a living. He's a fisherman. If you go ahead, you interfere with his trap, you're undermining his entire livelihood, that we have the right to stop you. Taisus gives other, the Rishonim give other truths, but this is what Taisus says. Let's fast forward, we're running out of time. Let me just fast forward to a Mordechai. The Mordechai discusses a Marufyo. Marufyo is apparently an Arabic word for a close associate. It seems that it was very common that people had, it sounds like it would probably, you know, there were Jews that worked for the royal courts, and they were the supplier. Whenever the court, whenever this prince needed anything, he had his fellow, his contact, he called him up and said, listen, I need jewelry, I need food, I need this. He was the contact. He's the one who we did business with. Now, back then, we didn't have the internet. Things were much more private. And this Marufya, whenever he needed something, you were his man. He didn't go shopping around. So the Mordechai comes along and says that there were some places that when there's a Marufya, if you're the guy's contact, you're his supplier, no one else is allowed to come and sell to him. Because you're the supplier, this is your parnasa. No one's allowed to come and interfere and take this away. This is one opinion of the Mordechai. Mordechai says that was only, this prohibition was only practiced in some places. In other places, they had a more liberal or more competitive attitude, and the rule was all bets are off, free market society, anyone can go ahead, anyone can grab whatever contacts, whatever suppliers you have, anyone can do what they want. There's no limit to this competition. How do we understand this dispute? So, the way the Achronim explain it is like this. Imarufya was something which was very steady. The king had better things to do with his time than to shop around and see if he can get this stone a few dollars cheaper on the internet. So if you were his supplier, once you were in, you were in. It was something that did not change. If it's something that did not change, it was stable. This is like a fish that was already in the trap. It was yours. It was in the trap, it's there. All you're going to do is close the trap, come home, you got it. It's in the bag, it's yours, you can bring it to the bank already. In that case, once there's a marufya, once you have this kind of relationship, no one's allowed to interfere. On the other hand, if the relationship is not quite as steady, if customers are not quite as loyal, they're much more price sensitive, you may have been serving them loyally for the past 30 years, but if they find there's a guy down the block that will undercut you by a nickel, they'll drop you like a hotcake and they'll go somewhere else. Their lashon is nisliach mereim kehefker. When people are not quite as loyal, there we don't apply the halachos of marufya. And since it's not in the bag, if you will, since although you've supplied him, there's no guarantee, or you have no right to assume this relationship will continue, and that's why in some areas the practice was not to enforce these halachos, and to allow open competition. Now, as far as the halacha l'maisa today, there's no clear hachra, there's no clear psak halacha verdict which way to follow. What many achroidim say is like this. In practice today, how many people here have clients that they would classify as a marufia? Loyal customers who don't shop around, you're their person, and that's it. You know they're coming back to you. What? Correct. This may have been true a few hundred years ago, or even true that you don't have to go that far back. There was a time, especially in this industry, where people didn't have the ability to go to the source. People didn't have the contacts to go ahead and to get things. If you were their broker, you were their contact, they turned to you whenever they needed. They trusted you, you had a relationship. You could have discussed the concept of marufia. And if you're lucky enough to have that, if there's a niche where it's a specialty and people do not shift from one to the next, there we can talk about marufia. However, the vast majority of clients and of suppliers jump from person to person. And even if they've stayed with you over time, that's only because when they go and price it somewhere else and they come back, they have the courtesy of coming back to you and say, listen, I know I can do better elsewhere, so you've dropped the prices. But it's not such a tight relationship. It's a relationship that is subject to change where the customer searches around. There, according to everyone, these restrictions would not apply. Now, this is the concept of marufia. Everyone agrees also that you have some areas where people are buying from multiple suppliers. If there are multiple suppliers and you want to get in, there are four suppliers, you want to be number five, certainly there are no restrictions because you're not bouncing anybody out. It's only when there's one supplier and you want to say, stop dealing with him, deal only with me, then you're dealing with a potential issue of a marufia. But in a case where there are bunch of suppliers, you want to just add yourself to the list, you're not pushing someone out, there it would be okay. Now just to summarize briefly, what it comes out is, in a specific deal, once there's a meeting of the minds, to go ahead and interfere with it would be tortious interference, or not, but it would be usser. If it's a phenomenal price that you can't find elsewhere, there the Ashkenazim would be lenient, it would allow someone to compete, although still it's makom for a person to be machmer for himself. When you're dealing with a relationship, if the relationship is not a strong and very steady relationship, then you do not have any limits with going ahead and trying to get it. If it is a strong relationship, there would be a concept of marufia. It's something which cannot be enforced by a bezdin because it is a dispute and because there were different minhagim, different practices. However, in such a case, especially if it is a person, a good chunk of the person's parnasa, who is really relying on it, then it's something where it's appropriate for a person to stay away. There are other clients, other people you can do business with, and to go ahead and to take away his business is something that should be avoided. Thank you very much for listening. I'll stay here and answer questions, but if anyone needs to go.
Thank you very much. Unless you have it signed, somebody is going to jump.